Hi everyone. In the following podcast, you'll hear the edited audio of Sienna's live Instagram interview with Joanne Roughton-Arnold, singer and founder of Formidability. Have you considered how concerts can be made more accessible and welcoming to diverse audiences? Joanna shares her experience of being a visually impaired performer alongside practical ways we can all promote inclusivity in the arts industry. Enjoy.
So my name is Joanne Roughton-Arnold. I am an opera singer. I'm a soprano. I started out as a violinist though and switched career as you do. I'm partially sighted, and I discovered that actually it's kind of a little bit easier as a singer than it is as an orchestral string player to have a visual impairment. But also, yeah. I got super excited when I discovered that that I had any vocal potential at all, which I really didn't know about all through my teenage years and into my 20s. So I began, while I was doing postgrad violin at Trinity College in London, I began doing some singing as a second study and fell head over heels in love with it, especially because you have words. And it's just that you're having a real tangible, you know, story to tell. I found it incredibly exciting. So I switched to singing, still play the violin, still do some violin teaching, because, you know, I feel the need to play some Bach, it comes out. I have done some singing with, I used to sing with Opera Holland Park, which was brilliant. Had a lovely series of summers working there, and a little bit with Loughborough Festival Opera, a little bit of research and development at the Royal Opera House, which is incredibly exciting to walk through that stage door. It wasn't public, but it was just an amazing experience. And the most I sing now with quite regularly with the British Para Orchestra, which is an amazing ensemble, an incredible organization, founded by Charles Hazelwood, who's sort of at the helm artistically. And the Para Orchestra is all about breaking down barriers for disabled musicians, giving a platform to players and singers who perhaps otherwise might be overlooked and yet are incredibly talented. And also about not being a them and us thing. It's about merging. So we'll do concerts where you might have 40% of the people on stage might identify as disabled, but no one in the audience would necessarily know who, because it's not all, you know, so many of them are hidden. So it's just artistically, it's super high quality work and just an amazing beast to be a part of.
Wonderful, thank you. You're obviously involved in a lot, and I would love to hear more about your show that is coming up in September.
Yeah.
So it's called A Bridge Between Breaths. And yeah, if you could just explain like what inspired this show, what the premise is, and then we'll dig a little bit deeper into the concept, if that's all right.
Of course. So I have this new opera company called Formidability, and we started, we were incorporated just last year. And when we had our first production last year, which went really well, I learned so much about the whole process of creating new work and a new opera and or new productions rather, and everything we're trying to do in terms of accessibility, which I'm sure we'll talk about later on. And so this year, when COVID came along, the Arts Council put up the emergency fund, and I thought, right, let's put a bid in and see what happens. So I applied to them, and we got some money, which has allowed us to start creating new work, because as I said in my application, people can compose in lockdown. It's one of the things in the arts that you can actually do in your room at home. So we've commissioned this new chamber opera. It's going to be about 30 to 40 minutes long in total in the end, from Gareth Churchill, who's a composer in Wales, and Hafsa Anila Bashir, who's this wonderful poet who I met in March, and I thought, I want to work with you one day. So I'm really excited that we have her on board. I said to her that we wanted to have something that resonated with the things that we've all been going through in this really strange time, but without being obvious. So we didn't want an opera about two people in lockdown, because it would just be really boring. I mean, it is only got two singers, a soprano and a tenor, and just two instrumentalists, clarinet and cello. So it's super portable and something we can, I hope, take and tour with. So I said to Hafsa, you know, this is the kind of thing we want. And she mulled it over and thought about things, and she came up with something really, a really beautiful thought in our first conversation, when she said to me that she felt like at that time, the world was caught between the inhale and the exhale. Yeah. I thought that was so beautiful. And then that idea of breath has become part of the whole kind of process. And she was going to make the opera made up of several unrelated vignettes showing different things that have happened during this pandemic from different perspectives, how we get, you know, how it's different if you're there experiencing something compared to, say, what we see in the media. And one of those vignettes was what we would then do in research and development in September. And she was thinking, okay, that the vignette we'd do would be one based on the felling of Colston statue in June. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, the inspiration keeps ticking along, the brain cells keep going. And then she had this amazing, I think, inspirational moment. And she emailed and said, actually, no, that is the opera. So it's become this work inspired by a real event, which is part of a massive global movement with Black Lives Matter. And it's so important. So I'm blown away by the fact that this little opera has turned into something that could have really far reaching, as a message that you know, is important for everybody. You know, opera holding a mirror up to the real world. It's very different from the stories that often get told on the operatic stage. So I'm really, really excited about this. And it's giving voice to a man called Perro Jones, who was a slave brought over from Nevis to Bristol in the 18th century. So the first act is in Bristol in the 18th century, and it's him singing about what he's feeling and what he's been going through and what he's seen. And there's going to be a spirit kind of calling to him. So I'm blown away by the way this has developed. Super excited. And, you know, as I say, we're going to be doing research and development in September. It's not the full show yet, because the full opera won't be completed in terms of composition until a little later this year. And after we've done the R&D, then we can start planning the full production, and how and when, and all of that comes with trying to make give something legs on stage.
Wow, how exciting, like how the different threads of this year have come together in one production.
Incredible.
You know, I have to say Formidability was only like properly formed last year, and then all of a sudden this comes together.
Yeah.
How
exactly. Okay. And you know, the title, The Bridge Between Breaths, Hafsa had come up with that before she decided to make the work about the colossal statue coming down. Mm-hmm. But this was all the idea of the breath, and I guess what we're dealing with in the pandemic, and on a very simple level, that, you know, breath is a big part of COVID, COVID, you know. And you know, and then there was the terrible, terrible incident with George Floyd's death. And clearly the breath is the big part of that. So it just, all these threads came together. And then she said that, you know, there's a bridge in Bristol named after the slave Perro, after this man. Yeah. So it's all kind of falling layers of artistry that are coming together. It's kind of like it was meant to be.
Incredible, like merging, as you say, of like past and present, and how that is still incredibly relevant today.
Exactly. And then, as I say, we're only doing the first act in R&D, and that's a bit in the 18th century, but the second or the third acts will be coming into the present day. So it'll be very real and here and now.
Definitely. So I wanted to talk a little bit more about how you're creating accessibility for the show. Mm-hmm. And you talk about how the opera will be kind of, I don't want to use the word mimicked, but kind of replicated on like a visual art form. You'll have like a painter on stage, is that right?
That's right.
You'll be like listening to the music and then interpreting that and painting.
Yes.
So like, how did you come up with this idea, and like, why visual art over other art forms? Just tell me more about this.
For quite a long time I've been have this idea mulling in the back of my head, wouldn't it be really interesting to play with the intersectionality between visual art and music.
Sure.
Last year, and when we started Formidability, I really wanted to make accessibility right at the heart of the creative process. So very different from the way it's often dealt with in theatre, where you're usually, the production is made, all the creative stuff happens, and then at the end, we need to put some a BSL signer on, or interpreter, or we need to put some audio description. And it's very much it's on the periphery, rather than being thought about at the start of the whole process of creating a new work. So So when we did our first production last year, we collaborated with some wonderful sign dancers. So they were dancers who've taken sign language and elevated it into dance, and were actually on stage in the centre with me as I sang. Mm-hmm. So we're really part of the whole thing. They weren't kind of on the edge of the stage signing. And then we had a live audio describer who wrote this beautiful script. She's a performance poet, so her words were just stunning. And I wanted to explore other ways as well, just to see what else can we try. And this idea of visual art then came into my head. I thought, the director we worked with last year, Sarah Brody, who's wonderful, on Hotspur and Pierre Lunaire, our first production. Sarah was asked the question in one of our workshops for the beginning of that process, what is opera? And she said, it's when someone has an emotion that is so intense that the only thing they can do is to sing.
Sure.
And I thought, that's brilliant. That's fantastic. So how about having an artist who can put that oral emotion onto paper and show that somehow in colour and the way the brush stroke, I don't know, everything. I'm not a visual artist, so I don't have the the tools, but, you know, and then we project that live and in real time onto a big screen so everyone can see it easily and not try to peer at it, sort of see around the artist's head. You know, it can never be specific the way sign language can be. So we're thinking about ways we could insert creative captioning as well. I'm not sure whether we're going to be able to do that in the R&D this September or not. We'd love to try. But that's something to certainly plan really carefully for the full production. And of course, I want to have audio description in the full production again. It's just that the R&D is just a small 1 week, 5 days of work. And we thought we'll focus on the accessibility for deaf audiences in this. And then, because we know audio description works, then we can bring that in later. But I've got some careful planning I want to do, because it's quite tricky doing audio description with opera when you've got an audio describer who is super sensitive to what's going on orally, not wanting to speak over someone while they're singing, or not wanting to destroy a beautiful soft moment or of silence by suddenly speaking. So you've got to plan it really, really carefully and make sure it's there. You know, of course, you know, it's only coming through headphones, so it's not like it. It's not like everybody hears it, and people can choose not to listen if they wanted to. They've got a choice. Certainly, I want to do that, and I'd love to have this lovely poetic language again that we had last year. So I think that worked beautifully.
Wow. So I'd really love to hear, you mentioned about how, like, in a normal opera, someone might think about, like, sign language, like, after considering how the project will work on stage. But obviously for you, this has been very much embedded, like, right at the beginning of the project. And I'd love to hear about how that has impacted your creative process, like, as an artist, as a creative, like, how has it affected your creative process in, like, writing the show, producing the show, and as you go into research and development as well?
I think it's taught me a lot. I'm learning a lot. I'm learning as I go. I mean, every day I'm learning something else, something new. Yeah. You know, last year, the production, I just had this idea that could we do this thing of putting accessibility at the heart of everything, because I'd done of the work I've seen and with a para orchestra. And there's a particular show that we do there called The Nature of Why, which we all are desperate to get back to doing again, but it's really, really immersive. So we can't, it's like you're close enough to smell a dancer. It's that kind of, the audience is on stage with the ensemble and the dancers, so it's really close. But anyway, that show really moved me, being part of that, singing in that, and seeing the way we touch people and the happy tears at the end of every show, and all the accessibility that's built into it, like having some text would be on a screen with a signer projected onto the screen next to them, so that people could hear something that was being read out, but also read it or watch the signer. So there's all these different layers of accessibility that you can choose to engage with or not. And also audio description is there as well, with headsets, and everyone's encouraged. You know, if there are enough headsets for anyone with a vision impairment, there's some left over, then as a sighted person, why not grab a headset and experience it too? Because it's beautiful, and it's not just, you know. So I thought, let's make accessibility beautiful and creative in its own right, rather than just this practical, functional thing. And so you meet people on this pathway. Obviously, journey is a real cliche, but it is. It's a real journey. The people I've met along the way have taught me so much. And most recently, I had a wonderful conversation with Jenny Seeley, who's the CEO and artistic director of Grey Eye, the theatre company. And we had such a great chat, which is on our the video is on our YouTube channel, talking about accessibility, all of this. And she gave me so many ideas and food for thought, and really gave me some more things to think about that I would like to be able to bring in the full production. Like, we already did Braille programs last year for our previous project, and that's something I want to do again. But what about easy read? And, what about finding ways to put things on the website that give people the information that they need in the format that they need it? So having a BSL interpreter do a version of the libretto, or the synopsis ahead, so someone could look at that, or have that, as Jenny said, have that on a screen at the theatre, in the foyer, or in the cafe, and it makes it visible as well, so people think, oh, there are these things, we can open up to more people. And also the other thing is having a really healthy mix of disabled and non-disabled artists working together on stage, completely in an equal footing, super high standard. So that people just come to see great art. And they happen to be watching some people who happen to have a disability, but that's not what defines them. What defines them is the talent and the hard work and the artistry. And it's getting that message across to the profession, the industry, as well as the public. So the more we do it, the more we do, really good quality stuff, the stronger the message gets. And that's exactly what the Parrot was just doing. And I thought, let's do this in opera as well. We need to.
Wonderful. Yeah, I think it's really inspiring, like, the extent that you're going to have the accessibility modules, and how, like, honestly, that normalizes it. Like, as you say, having the trailers in, like, being signed, or, whatever form of accessibility that is, it just normalizes it. And so hopefully it'll spread out to the rest of the arts industry as well.
Exactly. There's one thing that the Parrot Orchestra is doing, and we're going to emulate that as well. And that I've been talking to people, everyone's been saying, well, why isn't this normal? Is that when people, artists are hired, so say after contracting, send out a questionnaire to everybody to say, do you identify as disabled or long-term health condition? Do you have any personal access needs that we can help with? It normalizes it, and so it's not enough, that doesn't become special. Or even childcare, do you have any caring responsibilities that affect that we can be aware of when we're scheduling, but things like that could make life easier for everybody.
Definitely, they're very practical, tangible ways that we can promote diversity as well as accessibility. And that's kind of something that I want to move on to in this conversation. And my next question is quite a broad one, and I think we could probably have a whole another interview on this, but it's just about your experience of being a visually impaired artist and what it's been like for you in your career.
It's been really mixed. So when I changed from violin to singing as my performing work, I kind of naively thought, oh, it'll be easy, it's fine, because as a singer you either memorize the music or you have your own copy that you hold at whatever however close you need to. You don't have to share it with anybody, but there are a whole other kind of other issues, of course. Backstage is a dangerous place in a theater, and the stage can be a dangerous place depending on what the set design is. When I was doing my master's degree in singing, when I finished, our head of theatre gave me a reference, and he said, look, audition for companies, and then because people can't tell when they look at me that I'm partially sighted, and I've learnt, no one knows on stage when I'm working, but if you didn't know me, you wouldn't know, and the audience doesn't know, isn't aware. They are now. Doing things like this, but I don't care. So I came out of college and I auditioned, and our head of theatre wrote me this lovely reference just to say that I've done everything everybody else has done. I happen to be partially sighted, and with minimal extra technical time, never been a risk to myself or anybody else, but just reassurance. So I would audition And I would then say to the panel, oh, by the way, no big deal. I'm partially sighted. Here's a reference to assure you that I'm not any kind of, there's no kind of health and safety issue. Mm-hmm. And the reaction was usually embarrassment and no work. So I just thought, oh, all right. But you can't know why you're not getting cast or anything. It's a huge, hugely competitive industry. But it just felt a bit yucky. So I stopped saying anything and I began to get work. I thought, okay. And then that made me think, okay, I've got to keep this really quiet. So I spent 4 years when my first contract with Opera Holland Park, singing in the chorus there, and I did a little bit of work as a young artist, a couple of small roles. So for four seasons, I kept it hidden that I was partially sighted.
Okay.
Just got on with it. And, you know, some close friends within the chorus knew and were brilliant at just sort of smoothing the path for me if there was something that we could see might be an issue and like running down some steps. In the very first production we did in Carmen, a lovely friend of mine had to look as though she was dragging me on by the hair. And so we would do this, and as we went down these stone steps, she would go step, 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 just really quietly so I wouldn't trip. And it was great. And you know, and then after the fourth summer there, the Royal National Institute of Blind People were holding a workshop jointly with Opera Holland Park for some visually impaired children, and based around their children's opera, Alice in Wonderland, that was happening in the park. And it was a lovely, lovely piece. And the RNIB got in touch with me and said, look, we know that you've been keeping your visual impairment quiet, but we would really love you to be involved in this workshop. And we know that that would mean actually coming out, as it were, to the producers. So I thought, okay, you know, I think it was around the time of the Paralympics in London when things felt like they were changing. So I went up to one of the producers and I said, so I've been talking to James at the RNIB. and I explained why I had a lot to do with them, and why I'd kept my visual impairment quiet. And I said, but you know, I've climbed 2 meter scaffolding and on stage, and I've carried on a lighted candle, and I haven't fallen off the stage or set fire to the theatre. So I think I'm all right. And she was just absolutely lovely and totally understood. And then they got me to help run the workshop that year, which was lovely. And the following year, I led the equivalent workshop. So it was really kind of quite a relief to have actually come out and said, and it meant that I could do things like go up to a director and just quietly say, you know, I can't tell if you're trying to make eye contact in a large rehearsal room, so it would be really great if you could use names when you're talking to people. Just little practical things like that make all the difference. So that really helped. And, you know, and now I'm sort of loud and proud about the whole thing. And, if you told me, 10 years ago I was going to be having my own opera company that was all about accessibility and so on, I would have thought you were mad.
Yeah, that leads us on to Formidability. So, I mean, it's a wonderful story, and I would love you just to tell us the vision behind Formidability and why you formed it.
Okay. It was totally, as I said, it was a para orchestra. It was the work I was doing there, and in particular in the Nature of Why show. And, you know, and I was looking at what the difference the para orchestra is making to disabled artists and to the audiences that it touches. So I thought we've got to find a way to bring this kind of change into opera, because I love opera de bits. I love the profession. I love all the theatres. It's just a phenomenal, wonderful art form. So the ultimate escapism, really. But it's really behind in terms of accessibility for disabled artists. And it could be doing so much better. And I think that if we can get more people on stage who reflect the reality of the population, I think it's about 20% of the UK population identifies disabled, but you're not going to see anything like that number of people, of disabled artists on stage in an opera. It's time to move and improve things, really. People do a lot of talking about diversity and disability accessibility when it's the same thing. You know, there's so much intersectionality between, say, issues of ethnicity and diversity in that area, and disabled. You know, it crosses over. So we've got to start do a bit of joined up thinking, I think.
definitely.
Yeah.
So you've spoken a lot about your work, and there are so many like practical ways that you've spoken about and how we can accessibility, but I just wondered, like, if a young person either like has a disability or just like wants to be the change and promote diversity and accessibility in the arts, what practical, tangible tips would you give them?
I would say, don't take no for an answer. Just, you know, if you've got a real hunger and a real passion for what you do and whatever art form that is, absolutely go for it and be that person that stands up and says, I can do it. Absolutely, I can do it. You know, I've had so many people say no to me and in various ways. And, you know, you've got to develop a thick skin, because it's hard for everybody. And it's harder still if you've got, you know, something else that another issues you deal with. But you know what? Everybody has problems, has of some way. We're all carrying something with it. Yeah. So just, you know, be really, really strong and kind to yourself as well. Mm. And kind to the people around you. That goes a long way, a really, really long way. You know, yeah, it's competitive, but you know, you've got to be nice. and I think, yeah, be that person, get out there, be that person on stage that makes a little boy who has whatever, some kind of disability, and about his love for, say, singing, and be the one that shows them, you know, you can do it, you absolutely can. Yeah,
thank you so much. I just have one last question for you, and it's, where can people go to find out more about Formidability and A Bridge Between Breaths, and obviously the work that you do as well?
Sure. You can go to our website, which is formidability.org. We are on Twitter. We are at AbilityFormid. And it's the same for Instagram, AbilityFormid. You'll find us on Facebook as well. And also at the moment, Tête-à-Tête website. If you just Google that, the Tête-à-Tête Festival, we're a part of that as far as the R&D goes in September, which we're really excited about.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for sharing your experiences today, Joanne. I'm sure it will have helped so many young people. And yeah, I'm just really excited for A Bridge Between Breaths and all of the development.
Thank you so much. Thank you very much.
Bye.
Today's episode was made possible by Voice Magazine, an online platform for young people interested in art and culture. You can read Voice over at voicemag.uk and find it on Twitter, Instagram and Facebook as VoiceMagUK. The Voice contributors are also on Instagram over at voice.extra. If you are looking for another podcast to listen to, the contributors release the Voice Extra podcast every Saturday, where they talk about the pieces they've produced and the culture they've been enjoying. If you like this podcast, please consider helping us to make more with a donation of any amount at voicemag.uk/donate. Thanks to Kevin MacLeod for the use of the track Thief in the Night. You can find more of his work in computech.com. Tom Innes was the executive producer.